How do you know if you're worrying too much? How can you mend a broken heart? Does peaking at school ruin you for life? I'm Susie Ruffle, a stand-up comedian and someone who has always experienced anxiety. And I've written a book, Am I Having Fun Now? Considering some of life's big questions. Featuring bonus insights from the likes of Charlene Douglas, Sarah Pascoe, Elizabeth Day and Dolly Alderton. Am I Having Fun Now? Is out now in hardback, ebook and audio. And welcome to Like-Minded Friends with me, Susie Ruffle.
And me, Tom Allen.
How are you doing, Tom?
Well, I am a little warm, but I'm not, you know, everybody's talking about it, so I'm not going to talk about it. I'm a little bit warm, but it's no bad thing. It's fine. It's fine.
Well done.
I sort of talked about it, didn't I?
But you did sort of talk about it. You sound quite stressed by it.
I am a little bit stressed by it. I'm not sleeping very well. And, you know, normally I'm a nine-hour
nine-hour night girl.
To keep my bags in check, and recently I've been more of a 6 hour a night person, and that's not been welcome.
No, it's not been good for you at all.
Not at all.
Now, Tom, we've got a slightly different episode this week, haven't we?
Yes, I'm very excited about it. We talked before about using the Like-Minded Friends platform to introduce you, our listenership, to some fabulous people we've met along the way, and today's is a very special episode.
Yes, I think so. So we really felt at Like-Minded Friends, like we would love to use the platform for some really interesting, don't worry guys, there will be a lot of conversation next week about La Cruze's, about Tom's mum's hairdresser probably, about all the things that you know love about Like-Minded Friends. But this week, we thought we'd have a bit more of a, take on a bit of a bigger subject and talk about something that's a bit more important than all of that stuff. We're talking to a friend of mine, Jess Moraine, and also Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire, who are a group of young people that are incredible that Jess is going to tell us all about. But the reason that we've got Jess on as well is that Jess is my friend and she connected us with the Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire group. And this sort of came about because sort of not long after the death of George Floyd in America, Jess and I were texting. We worked together a couple of years ago on a short film and we were having a conversation about how to uplift voices. And it felt like-minded friends, it would be a great opportunity. It would be something that we would love to do. And we've often thought about how we can use the podcast in a really positive way. And this feels like a really, hopefully a really great way of doing it. And hopefully you, our listeners, will enjoy that as well. So hello, Jess.
Hello, friends. Nice to see you in this blinding apocalyptic heat.
Hi, Jess. Yes, it is apocalyptic, isn't it?
It is slightly.
That's a good word for it. The leaves in the garden, let me tell you, they're falling off the trees. They're too warm.
They're mulch. They're dry mulch. So is my borrowed laptop is also under quite a lot of duress, guys. So give me the heads up if you hear me melting on screen.
I get that actually quite a lot where my Zoom calls will go,
I'm too hot.
Maybe closing Zoom would help. I'm like, the only reason I'm using you is because if I turn Zoom off, I may as well just throw the whole thing in the bin.
That seems quite extreme.
Well, that's how warm I was.
Okay, fine.
Yes.
So, Jess, how are you? So, Jess and I met, dear listener, Jess and I met when we were doing a short film I said it was last year. Jess has now corrected me. It was 2 years ago.
Yeah. What was this short film? What's all this short film about? What was it about?
It was really good, actually. It was written by a friend of ours, Mark Pinkosh, who also has a theatre company called Starving Artists. And it was sort of a love story. Jess and I had
it was a love story. I mean, Mark's a babe, total babe. Hello to Mark. But yeah, it was the first time. Well, actually, it wasn't the first time I'd met you. I met you in Edinburgh.
Yes.
I feel like it was also a little bit of an anti-love story of looking at one person's routine or navigating the world of what it is to be an artist. We had some fun, you know. Sexier scenes.
We did. Yeah, I kept laughing. I kept laughing when we were doing kissing.
Oh my goodness! What, you were laughing? Why?
Yeah, I don't think that's sexy. I don't think that made the edit.
I've never seen a film where that happens. Actually,
where it was like,
yeah.
That should make the edit.
Maybe it's a bit more normal. Maybe.
Yeah. Right. We also had a really fun conversation before. Like, not fun. Like the conversation that we absolutely should have, but. When you're shooting a scene like that, you sort of go, So at one point, I think I'm going to sort of touch your hips. Are you comfortable with that? And then I'll sort of like, I'll give you a hug a bit. And how do you feel about me sort of putting my hands at the back of your neck? And sort of saying...
And you had to clear... You discussed
I wanted
things.
To clear it.
I mean, we did. We went in and like, in a weird sort of way, that was kind of... I love that as much as I did the filming. Like, you know, the planning. Go. You need
planning of...
The planning. Maybe people should do that more. That's well, they do. Say,
you know, we've got intimacy advisors now. We didn't have one, but we didn't.
Clearly, Mark thought these two girls, they've had some intimacy before.
Sure. But I mean, in real life, maybe people should do that. Schedule it. I'm going to touch your hip, and then I'm going to touch this.
It sounds like a sort of... Like a dance that you would do, you know, like when everyone does it at the same time.
Like the Macarena.
Just like that.
It kind of baffles me in a way that like, why haven't we been doing that all along? Do you know what I mean? Like, how nice to meet you. So like, okay, get on set and start snogging. Like that's just like been the supposed norm for so long. It's fucking weird. So yeah, the chat was good.
Yeah, it was very good. Now, Jess, you're one of those actors that actually work, aren't you?
maybe not so much now, I'll be honest. Slightly reduced space for that. But yes, I've been up to a few things. Yeah, it's been a good old run actually. I'm having fun.
And what sort of happened? Because you do a lot of theatre, don't you?
Yes.
You've done stuff with the RSC and then stuff sort of all over the shop, and you've also got your own theatre company.
Yeah, I kind of do a bit of a mishmash. I'm sort of more from a collaborative background. I'm very much about like the making side of things, and at the same time I'm working with companies in sort of their proposed projects, but at the same time I make my own stuff. I do a lot of writing, so it's sort of cross-disciplinary making, combining like poetry, live music. I'm interested in artist filmmaking, so I guess I try not to box myself in, but my main jam is theatre making and poetry.
What has lockdown been like for someone? Because we know what it's like for people that work in comedy, but what's it been like for someone who works a lot in theatre?
Do you know what? I think I'm having so many conversations about this at the moment. And that for me has been such a wonderful revelation. It's like, actually, there's so much on the artist, and that's a capitalist thing, right? Like, what is our value? What's the output? What are you making? And like, actually, loads of mates and I have just been talking, how do we acknowledge that this is a moment to actually just slow the fuck down? And you know, I'm no less of an artist if I can't find a physical space to make in. But I think there's been a real loss for the theatre maker, understandably, because we all know why theatres need to be closed. But it's sort of a very, very quick shift, such a global moment that essentially I'll go to my, you know, walk around my local area and the pub is open, and yet my place of work I can't be with people. I think that's the loss for loads of artists that make in the live. Where does that go? And I think that's maybe the biggest question is, how is the artist valued? How is the theatre maker valued? And like, how do we gather in alternative ways? I think that's the big question. Yeah,
I love that stance on it as well, like alternative ways of gathering. Because I suppose it is a chance to break out of what has become I'm sure it has many positives as well, but that kind of quite system based theatre, isn't it? It's all kind of quite regimented. Do you know what I mean? Like it's all quite. And I think I don't know. I'm sure it's got lots of flaws, which actually now is a good time to explode them. And
yeah, man, bring it down. Like, just bring it all down. I was talking to a very exciting artist called Selena Thompson recently, and she kind of reminded me of like how, you know, actors and theatre makers are very often very intense. It's like, right, let's make something in a 4-week period in a room with no light. And actually, like, this is a moment that we can really like reflect and take a bit of a pause to work out what stories we want to share. I think
I was having a really interesting with the theatre maker Travis Alabanza the other day, who's brilliant, and they said something that I think had been in my head, but them actually saying it was like, oh yeah, that's exactly how I've been feeling. They said that they'd never had a pause put on their work, because when you're someone that is job to job and you're a freelancer, and you know, we never know where exactly the next job's coming from, or maybe, you know, sometimes you've got a couple of jobs in a row and that's great, but you know, you're always working to create that new thing.
Yes, for sure.
And I totally agreed with them that, yeah, I'd never had this enforced pause. And actually, they were talking about finding a way to enjoy it.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a really good...
Well, and I think as well, because we're sometimes... I think if you do anything creatively, it's assumed, oh, you basically do a hobby for a living. You know what I mean? And actually, everybody I know who works in creative industries works really hard. Like, nobody... Because you're self-employed, so at the end of the day,
there's
it's always
no
up to you.
There's no slackers, really,
there's no real
there?
Slackers. So I think having to... But switching that off... Or learning, you know, new ways to kind of approach that it's powerful, and hopefully it's positive.
I hope so. I mean, hopefully this moment is a reflection that we're not just the sum of our output.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And that actually it reflects on how hard freelancers work. There's a lot of like conversation always around like, back in the day when I'd tell people I want to be an actor, I wanted to be an actor, and it was often met with like, oh, that's a bit tricky. Oh, it's a hard one.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
But
the
question is how to work out of work, or how to sustain when you are working like those days for rest and those moments to really check in of like, if you're not knowing when you can make, there's a underlying panic or anxiety, I think, around like, you know, when the next gig is coming. And I think that's like a moment to also reflect on, like, what do we want to make now that there's been a huge seismic shift in our planet, essentially.
Yeah.
So what have you been doing to fill your time?
Enough of this.
Yeah. So enough of this. What have you created? Come on. Do a one-woman show. Come on.
Do you know what I mean? One thing I'm not doing is like anything too heavily Zoom-based. I'll be totally honest. I'm not digging the shows on Zoom. Not that I don't think we need a place to adapt, but I'm much more interested in like, I've been doing a lot of writing. Like, okay, what about, utilising... my interest in poetry in a new way. So I think like just really having the time to write has been awesome.
That's to have that quiet time, I think, is so important to write. Yeah. So actually sort of having fewer distractions is good in a way, isn't it?
It is good. And I don't know if you guys find this when you're sat down to like, you know, do something that's been on your mind. I'm like a horrible person to be around. Like my girlfriend's like, you don't want me to speak to you when you're writing. I'm like, that's true.
Yeah. I hear that. I accept that. You're correct.
That is right. I will leave and write in a socially distanced cafe. Yeah. But, I think there is something in that though, like what it is to work in the house. You know, like if you're a creative, you don't have those 9 to 5. It sounds pretty obvious, but like, what does working mean? What's the line? You know, so I've been sitting on my laptop a lot.
That's something that we've talked about a lot, because Tom's currently writing a book and you keep quite strange hours, don't you?
I do keep odd hours. I don't want to tell you. Yeah.
Pray do tell, Tom.
Well, I realised that, you know, you can't sit down at 9 o'clock in the morning. Well, I can't sit down at 9 o'clock in the morning and just tap, 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 tap. I need a bit of time just to settle into being at the desk, relaxing and almost kind of exhausting, like my John Lewis website searches, which are almost exhaustive.
Sorry, Tom, remind me, are you gay?
I am, by the way, gay. I mentioned that. And just kind of, and I'll look at, you know, whatever. And then I'll go, now I want to write. And so I might not start writing until 2 p.m. But then I'll write into
the
evening.
How big is the John Lewis website? You're there at 9, all the way to 2.
Thousands of articles. No, I don't sit down at 9. I can't. I'm not a morning person. And I'm 37, and I know that now of myself. I forgive myself.
Yes. Yeah, I hear that. I think mornings. I find mornings can be very, very anxious periods.
Yes, I feel like that because. I mean, sometimes it does work, but a lot of the time it's like, oh gosh, I should be doing so much. It's the morning. Now's the time. Now's the best bit of the day to get everything done. And I'm like,
catch the worm, catch the worm.
Catch the worm. Oh my God.
What is the phrase? Catch the worm. Eat your frog is another good one.
Oh, that. What does that mean? Is that based on something?
I have no idea. It feels very folkloric, doesn't it? But I feel like I just need to get my stuff done. It's like, oh, just eat your frog.
I've never heard that before.
Maybe it's wiggling. Is that why? Because it's jumping.
I've never heard that before, Joe.
I mean, this is what happens also in these conversations. Is like this weird confessional space of Zoom where I just don't stop talking. That's something I need to keep in mind.
No.
Welcome home.
It's very much a flirt at your home. Feel free to come here whenever you like.
Thanks, guys.
We've been talking I mean, a lot for five years now,
and we still haven't run out of things to say.
Which is amazing. Although some people will sometimes tweet. You've already told that story.
Well, okay, fine. Well, we won't do that on the other podcast we do.
Do you guys have a rule of like, you know, you can only repeat certain times, or I mean, I'm assuming because. I mean, that wouldn't work, would it? To just repeat the same story? Or is there like,
That's part of the, it's like an installation, actually. We just do the same story every week.
Great, it's a durational performance piece.
Yeah, it's sort of thing you see in the Tate Modern.
We've been working through the complete works of Shakespeare for 5 years, just do half an hour at a time.
I remember going to see an art exhibit, I think it was at the Tate Modern, where somebody was just reading out like a map, like an index of a map or something, or like, It was really long, and they were just reading it out, like, and then people would like come in and then read for like a day of like ordnance survey, like coordinates.
Are you sure you didn't just bump into someone reading a map?
I might have done. Let me tell you, I was not good on directions for them.
I'm so confused. What are you looking for? They have their own maps.
This is a terrible installation. Oh, you are not. They were doing the Duke of Edinburgh. Anyway. So
Jess, the reason that we wanted to get you on the podcast was, of course, to talk to you and to highlight your work. Also, can you tell us what your theatre company is called, when we're out of all of this and people are looking for something brilliant to go and see, they can go and see what you're up to.
Awesome. We are called Theatre with Legs. It's co-founded with my very, very close mate, Lucy Bairstow. And we've had a bit of a hiatus, but actually we plan to and have been speaking about for a while about making kind of staging an album about regional identity. You know what? It's similar to you guys, you know, like there's like very few people in my life that make me laugh and, you know, close to, you know, the rolling around on the floor type laughing. And I just love making with Luce, and I know we've got a lot of stuff. I guess that we're just planning the reunion, like, you know, how we can get stuff going again. So yeah, it's pretty exciting, and we've been working together for since about 2011 now.
Oh wow,
it's been quite a while.
I think there already is such a hunger for work like you describe, and from new voices, and from, you know, people just doing stuff organically from themselves. I think that's the sort of stuff I love to go and see. And I love, you know, and maybe, you know, maybe the people be able to go and see you in an unconventional space. That would be exciting as well.
Who knows? Well, you know, if initially we're planning the album, so there's so much we could do with that. You know, what is it? We even had questions initially about how do you actually stage an album? Do you know what I mean? How is there, because often we work a lot with clown, and potentially there's a lot of expectation on the audience to engage, but actually if you're staging music, you know, we envisage like loads of people potentially just going with their eyes closed, just a listening experience we'll see. But I just like hanging out, and we're very obsessive, so essentially we just, you know, just take it to the stage after obsessing about it for hours.
Oh great, oh wow.
So listener, we will remind you when we hear from Jess to say that they are doing something, or if they're putting out something out in an audio fashion, or if they're doing something sort of live where you can watch it. We'll be sure to let you know so that you can support and get involved. Now, you were saying about regional identity, which links us quite nicely to the conversation that we were having about activism a little while ago, because you're from Hertfordshire, aren't you?
I'm from Hertfordshire, yeah.
And so what was it like growing up there?
I mean, at the time, as you do as a kid, you don't necessarily even question that. And now I can reflect back and think it was such a mix. It was such a mix of many things. But I, you know, it's Hertfordshire is, as a home county, it's kind of, you imagine it, often there's a response from many people that when I say I'm from Hertfordshire, one of surprise. And that often makes me think, well, maybe there's this idea of what home county is. And I understand that, you know, the suburban, glossy, sort of image that maybe it might come into our minds. But for me, Hertfordshire was it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful county, and it's not necessarily like one that comes to mind when you think of countryside, but I love growing up in all that beautiful space, that green space. But it was very white, you know, it's a very white county. And then I later moved to study at Exeter University, and, you know, Devon and Cornwall, also both very white counties. So I'm used to thinking about that now, but perhaps as a kid, that's not something that I essentially even consciously was tapping into. It was much more of a felt thing that was sort of underlying all the time. But I was lucky. I had a very loving friendship group. Like, I've always been very lucky in that. I've always felt very solid with my tribes, if you know what I mean. And I actually do sometimes question, like, how, I mean, it's a dangerous path to go down, but like, how different would it have been without those mates? So yeah, I felt very, very secure in my friendships. And I'm from a very like sound, loving family. So I like, for the most part, it was great. But obviously, as with all things, growing up as a minority is something that I've thought much more about as an adult. Yeah.
Mm. And it was actually your cousin that's got a link to the Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire group.
Yes. Yes. So
I saw you sharing a link on Twitter, being like, "Oh, guys, if you can, if anyone's got any money," and that's when I was like, "Oh, what's this? Can we? How can I shout about it?" Sort of thing. This sounds great. So, how did you first hear about them?
Well, this is the mad thing, right? So, Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire popped up on my Twitter feed, and I was like, "Great! You know, like, this is amazing." I was so excited because I honestly didn't necessarily anticipate a protest or so many regional protests. Even though it's close to London, you know, you don't necessarily get that feeling when I go home. It almost feels like a separate world to me. And I had no idea that my cousin was a part of this group. Like she didn't mention it at all. She just passed me this link, and I was like, "Yes, my county's showing up." So then to discover that it was literally on my doorstep with a group of young activists who were just doing the do's. They weren't. There was no kind of level of sort of virtue signaling, or they. What I love about this group is they just get down to it, to the point where my cousin didn't even mention that she was part of this group. And my background is my heritage. My dad is Black British Caribbean, and my mum is White British. And so the cousin actually that works with the group as a part of this group is white. And I think that's another kind of important thing to mention, is like, when I tell people about this, there's an assumption that that, you know, it's like potentially it's a Black-led conversation, and the Black activism is hugely essential to center that, the Black experience. But, you know, teenagers from all ethnicities are getting involved in different types of activism, and that's what for me felt like one of the most exciting things to be a part of.
And sort of showing true allyship.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, helping, you know, not necessarily leading conversation, not trying to center themselves in conversation at all, just being there, listening, showing up.
Yeah, 100%. And you know, they jam a lot together in many other spaces. That's one of the things I love most about teenagers, is that it comes very, you know, don't get me wrong, they work really hard and they're an inner part of many other activist groups, but my cousin, you know, she is friends with they're all mates. So I think that was something that I was really excited by as well. Like, they were inviting me to speak at their event. And I was like, yeah, I'm really excited to learn more about what they as a group do and how they socialize, as well as their activist spaces.
I know, because you messaged me after you'd been to see them, and you were like, "Wow, these are sort of not teenagers. Like, don't think of it as like what we may have been like as teenagers. Like, these are young people that know their stuff, that are creating, you know, spaces that are, you know, being activists in really impressive ways."
Yeah, for sure. And that was a big sort of mirror back to me, in a way, that I had anticipated, you know, I like to think it wasn't in a patronizing way, but I perhaps didn't necessarily anticipate how kind of organized they were, how on it they are. And actually, when you think about regional protests, you have to be more, if it's localized, you have to be more on it, because there isn't, you know, for example, if you were to get a request for more information, or dig into the local archives, or you want freedom of information requests from like the local police, for example. You have to work a lot harder in those spaces to organise events. And that's aside from the demographic and maybe the response that you might be met with in different areas of the UK is definitely notably different to the experience that it is when you protest in London. But yeah, I mean, they're incredible, and they hugely inspired me to essentially just wanna do more. And like, we must always take that time to chill and rest and work at whatever capacity we feel able. But I'm not ever going to give up on this stuff. Like, that's just not an option, because for them, it's not even a question of getting out there and just doing it. They don't even overthink it. They just do. So that was hugely, just bloody inspiring.
Well, Jess, thank you so much for introducing us to them. And now we very excitedly are going to a conversation that Tom and I had with two members of the Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire group. It was absolutely brilliant. We were blown away by just how brilliant they were. And I think it's really our pleasure to be able to share them with you. Let's have a listen to that now. So, Tom, really excitingly.
Yes, Susie.
Now we've got an opportunity to chat to some young people who are doing some incredible work, who we want to support and listen to, who are the group from Black Lives Matter Hertfordshire. Hi, guys. How are you doing?
I'm good.
Hi.
Thank you.
Good,
hi. Thank you. Hi. And could you introduce yourself to us, please?
Hi, my name's Ewa Adu. I'm 18 years old. I'm British Nigerian. And I'm about to start uni this September, and I'm studying politics and philosophy, and I live in Hertfordshire.
Oh, great. Great to meet you.
Hi, I'm Zane. I'm also 18 from Hertfordshire. I'm kind of in between going to university or gap year, but I study film and make films and, yeah, work with parts of that business.
Great.
Oh,
that great. Sounds so interesting.
Hertfordshire, this is better than me. Where is Hertfordshire? Is it
north of London?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like the home counties. Yeah. It's about like 40 minutes away from London.
How did BLM Hearts start? When did that begin?
It kind of began in response to what happened in America, the murder of George Floyd. I think it was seen as like, this is now... weirdly, it was a good time to kind of speak up, even though it's so awful what actually brought that to happen. It was an opportunity to be like, well, we need to address this here. We need to stand in solidarity with what's going on globally, as well as highlighting the fact that there is still racism where we live. I think a lot of people just say, oh, why are you doing a group fighting for America when you're in the United Kingdom? But people don't realise that this is actually a really big issue here. So we've been able to kind of use the group to highlight what's going on here, as well as standing in solidarity globally.
And so how did it start? Was it on sort of social media, or did you know lots of people in the area that wanted to get involved? I don't even know how you would, you're so young, clearly so bright, and you're doing shit, you're getting shit done and you're making noise, and that's so inspiring and brilliant, and we're so lucky that you're spending some time with us on the podcast. But how do you even start that conversation of going, we need to create something here locally as well as globally?
I think Zane literally, I think it was a few weeks after it happened, you'd seen so many protests in London and demonstrations, but very few in like places like Hertfordshire that were more remote. And then I think Zane literally just messaged me like, we should do something, and she just created a group chat, and we were just brainstorming ideas, because I think obviously she has a lot of links with the climate change organisations, and we just started, and we were brainstorming and had Zoom calls and thought, what can we do, and things like that. It's all very informal, so we just like just try and brainstorm and get as many people involved in the activism.
You know, you saying it's really important, the point that you made earlier, Zane, about how people often think like, oh, why are you doing something that is about America, when of course it's not. This is happening. It's entrenched in our society. There's institutional racism that we need to all be aware of and need to address. Certainly as white people, we need to address that, and we need to, you know, make positive steps forward. But what is it that was sort of, was there something specific that was happening locally, or was it just about that sort of ingrained racism that exists within the UK?
I think it was more the fact that some people that I've grown up around, particularly white people that I've grown up around, were kind of, as I was posting online and talking about this on my own social media, they kind of didn't see that this was actually like something that they needed to be involved in. And it was really upsetting that like some people were like, I don't really want to have this conversation, or I'm just going to kind of brush over what you're talking about. And I'd have a few people say things like, it's inspiring that you're talking about it, but it's not something that should be inspiring. It's something for all of us to be like involved in and talking about. Like, it's great that we can appreciate our actions, but I kind of wanted more than just a thumbs up message from a friend. I kind of wanted people to get more involved.
They need to be there at the marches and walk shoulder to shoulder with you guys and show proper solidarity rather than just liking a tweet.
Yeah, exactly.
It feels as well that I understand that people have sort of, it started a conversation, which feels like that's a really important part. Because I know you mentioned there about how it's so easy just to brush over things or to just sort of go, oh, that's a bit uncomfortable. And it feels like what feels a big part of it is talking openly. Is that something that you found?
Yeah, I think as time progressed and people were like, okay, this isn't just like another video of a murdered black man. People were having more conversations. Even in my church, they addressed it and had like a conversation. And like people have been trying to actually facilitate meaningful conversations to make smaller change on like a smaller scale. And I think that's kind of come from the fact that we were pressing on locally and saying we're not just going to disappear after what had happened. Like, we continued to be consistent in what we were doing.
I know that BML Hearts is something that is growing, and you're continuing to have those conversations. What is it that you're hoping that people within your community will hear?
We have aims. So one of our aims was ensuring that, because I think Hertfordshire is like, it's a very predominantly white area. So I think there's like very few, there's like less black and ethnic minority people. So if like, for example, when I was growing up in school, we didn't have many Black History Assemblies. So one of our aims is ensuring that every single school in Hertfordshire is committed to doing Black History workshops, so that we can have that.
Yeah, that's so important. I can't believe, like, you know, I went to school a little while ago, sure, but you know, I just think we got so little Black history, and there were, you know, and I had Black friends at school, and you just think, oh, it's just, it's such a white, it's not the absence of Black history, it's also the whitewashing of history.
Yeah.
And the inability to maybe have serious discussions about things that actually happened, because I think, again, because of uncomfortableness, because of a whitewashing, because of a desire to paint history through some sort of rose-tinted lenses rather than actually sort of engage with the truthfulness of what happened. Would you mind, Zane, would you mind telling us about some of the other aims of the group?
Yeah, so kind of beyond, I mean, the main focus is education, so beyond like school workshops, we have like, we want to hopefully take what we do on Zoom, like post, obviously everything's a bit confusing at the moment, but kind of like hopefully doing meetings and like sessions with like the wider community and like community centers, and just having like you said, conversations, like making that really important and making space for people to just come and like sit and like just talk, and especially for other Black people and other ethnic groups in Hertfordshire to have a space where they can just speak and like exist and hopefully get across what it is that they've experienced, so we can kind of like work from there and like build to change like the climate here.
Sure. Yeah. And how have you found that it's been received in the local community? Has there been a positive response?
I think it's been quite mixed. I think depending on where you are in Hertfordshire, so like say where I am, most people are quite open to like different groups. Like, I don't think there's as much tension like what happened in Hoddesdon, where we were faced with like anti-protesters that were screaming at us for being there.
Really?
And like the language that they used, where I live, that wouldn't happen, and that's just like a 40-minute difference on like across the motorway.
Really?
So it's a really odd mix. You can't really tell. Like, I'd say here is quite, where I am is quite open to having these conversations, but somewhere else might not be. It's really dependent. I think in general, it's been quite good. A lot of people have just got in touch to say that they're glad, even though it's not been easy, they're glad that we're doing what we're doing.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, that's, and that's exactly sort of the reason that I was so delighted that you guys were up coming on the podcast, because I think it's so wonderful that you exist and we want more people to know that you do. Now, our listeners are brilliant, and I'm sure they're thinking, well, Suze, Tom, how can we reach out? How can we get in touch? How can we support? What can people do that would be of use? What can we follow as their donation pages? How can we support you guys?
So yeah, we're in the process of organising our own workshops to get Black history taught in schools, like to use drama and poetry, so it's more accessible for children. So I think getting the views of teachers and just getting obviously the money and financial resources to make that happen would be very helpful. And just getting a wide like group of people who can help, like teachers and creatives, to help with that would be really helpful.
And how can people find all about that? Is that Twitter? Would that be a good place to start? Or is there an Instagram page?
Yeah, we have an Instagram handle. It's at HeartBLM.
And is that the same handle for Twitter?
Yeah, same handle for Twitter.
Great.
Oh, fantastic. And I think as well that, you know, perhaps like more than you realise, just that people will be following what you're doing and will feel, will not, I know, word inspired is not one that you like, but will feel empowered and emboldened to join with you. And I think it's really great to chat to you guys.
And all of our listeners, please do reach out, listen, get in touch. If you are one of those people with loads of money, put your hands in your pockets, guys. Yeah, thank you so much for your time. I hope that you've enjoyed having a chat with us.
No, thank you for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure. And as Tom said, we don't want to use the word inspired, because I think you're right. There's lots of connotations around it. But I'm really delighted that you shared your time with us. And I really hope that in some small way, we get the message out to some of our listeners.
Thank you very much.
So thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Like-Minded Friends.
Yes,
and
you.
If you're a person who might be an activist, or maybe you're a creator of someone and you'd like to get in touch with us and maybe share what you do on Like-Minded Friends, please do get in touch. As you know, we're both on Twitter, or we're on Instagram, or alternatively, you can email chattolikemindedfriends@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You're both smiling as I'm saying that, because the email's so long.
It's such a great email. Such a great email address. Every week, I think, what a great email address we've got.
But do get in touch. We love to hear from you.
We love emails. And no, we love all means of communication. I really enjoyed today's episode, and I really hope that all our listeners did too. I'm very excited for all our listeners to be aware of what we talked about and to engage and to... And to be part of what was discussed.
Yes, absolutely. And if you would like to learn more, please do. In the show notes, there are details about Black Lives Matters Hertfordshire, and also about Jess Moraine and her theatre company. So please do have a look and support. And thank you as ever for listening to Like-Minded Friends. And we will see you again next week.
We will.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
How do you know if you're worrying too much? How can you mend a broken heart? Does peaking at school ruin you for life? I'm Susie Ruffle, a stand-up comedian and someone who has always experienced anxiety. And I've written a book, Am I Having Fun Now? Considering some of life's big questions. Featuring bonus insights from the likes of Charlene Douglas, Sarah Pascoe, Elizabeth Day and Dolly Alderton. Am I Having Fun Now? Is out now in hardback, ebook and audio.